Oh my, everybody up on this roof, that they're all off the roof. I am on the roof of Explosion 4. Got fire through the roof of the fire, knowing the entire rear section.
Now, remember, given the mayday, has he been accounted for? Okay.
610B, that was the mayday. 610B.
I'm here. We got a fire. 1.5-story, single-family dwelling. Fire shown from the second floor. Give me a second alarm on this.
Up to the top floor. I got people hanging out the top floor windows with a baby.
Commercial building. A lot of fire, a lot of smoke. Go ahead and strike a third alarm on my orders on this.
I got people on the front fire escape here with windows vented below them. We need somebody up there.
Yeah, let them know we got a job. I'm pulling up now. Second alarm, I got a 1-story single family frame, heavy fire showing from the attic.
So we're using all hands. We got one line stretched, fire on the fourth floor, second line being stretched, primary searches are underway.
Hey, welcome to our Fire Engineering Podcast, The Command Post. I'm Chief Rick Lasky, along with my buddy, my best buddy, Chief John Salka, and we've got another great show for you today. You know, we've had to reschedule a couple things with the whole COVID you know, spiking in some areas, but a lot of folks were still doing programs. You know, if we have to social distance, we social distance. So we're still traveling. We're still knocking out classes. John, you know, I said this before, you know, there's a lot of private sector people, there's a lot of people in the business world that love working from home. They love not having to go to the office and going to work. But buddy, firefighters are tired. How about it? They want to get out and they want to be in the classroom. You know, FDIC. FDIC was phenomenal, wasn't it?
It was great. Yeah. Other than the numbers being down a little bit, which was absolutely understandable with COVID, but they were still gigantic numbers, and there were people there from everywhere. They said the numbers were down, but frankly, it didn't really seem like it. Some of the classes were a little bit lighter, but everybody was all pumped up and happy to be there, and everybody was just, you know, really in a good mood, just being back at the big show, being back at any show, frankly.
Well, exactly. And you and I, I know we both stood up before opening ceremonies started and turned around, looked back. And aside from maybe the sides where a couple, like there might've been some empty chairs on the far corners, the room was packed. I mean, it was
good crowd.
Oh, and forget the pandemic, right? We said this, forget there was a pandemic going on. It was August, you know, August. And oh my God, it was great. We loved seeing everybody. Great classes. It was just so, you know what, John, I don't know about you. I needed that. I needed to be at FDIC, seeing everybody, FDNY night at the Raskeller, going up to Diane's room and, you know, fire engineering's room and just, and then, you know, my volunteer chief, Ryan Fetzer from the Wichita West Volunteer Fire Department, my department.
Well, they had a great time.
Oh, he and my captain, Chris Bashford, first, Chris and Ryan's first FDIC. Now we got them hooked. Now they'll be back there all the time. So they're hooked now, but it was a great FDIC. I was just excited to have them there. My two good friends, my chief and my captain, and Wichita West representing North Texas. It was pretty cool, but
very nice.
And then we're back there in April. So just FDIC.com for our listeners. Make sure you check that out and stay current, and you know, register early as soon as you can when they open up registration, so you can get your rooms and everything else, because it's going to be, if you think 20,000 plus people were a big deal in August, wait till you see what's going to be going on in April. So yep. Hey, we've always got some great classes and seminars coming up, so all you gotta do is get a hold of John and I. We give our emails at the end. I post on my website, prideandownership.com, and on my Facebook page all my classes, but also all the classes that John and I do together. You know, so we got some great Missouri, John, hopefully that we're down a little bit in numbers, but that's creeping up. Company Officer Academy coming up and a Chief Officer Academy, among other things. So, you know, if you're interested in hosting, just get a hold of us. If you're interested in hosting a Company Officer Academy, reach out to John or I. We'll set you up ourselves, or we'll get you set up with Columbia Southern University, our great partners, and we'll go from there. Oh, I can't go any. We can't get into our show topic until. So, big announcement for Wichita West. Big announcement for Wichita West. You know, for those that know my best buddy John Salka here, not only all the years with the FDNY, 33 plus years, but you know, got 45 years plus as a volunteer firefighter. He's currently the chief of a great volunteer fire department, Orange County, New York, the South Blooming Grove Fire District, Independence Fire Company. I always remember to say that. And they bought a new ladder truck a while back. And the current ladder truck that they have served with the FDNY. It was ladder 24, first due at the Empire State Building. And then when they took ownership of it, South Blooming Grove, they totally refurbed it and dropped a new motor in it, a new ladder and all that. And now they're passing that on to us. The Wichita West Volunteer Fire Department will be taking ownership. We're flying up there. I'm personally going up there with our good friend, Will Norris. We're going up to pick it up October 2nd and drive it back. So baby, everybody at Wichita West is excited to get that ladder truck and then get trained on it and get it in service. So Chief Salka, to you and your membership, first of all, I can't thank you enough on behalf of our department. I know my chief's really excited, but to your membership, I don't think they'll ever truly know. And I know they're excited to know it's going to a good place. You said that, but I don't think they'll ever truly know, John, just what it means to our department, to our residents, to our business owners. It's freaking awesome. So thanks, buddy. That is
great. Well, it's nice to know that this rig in its third life will be serving another great community.
Well, and it's beautiful. You guys, it's unbelievable, the care and maintenance. You look at this rig and it's like, oh my God, it's like they just drove it from Seagrave, you know, up to the fire.
And it normally looks even better because it's been inside for 30 years. It's parked outside now because the new truck is inside. So it even normally looks better. Once you get that and polish it up, and it's going to look like it just came out of the factory.
Oh, so we're excited. So thank you to the South Blooming Grove Fire District for taking care of, your another sister department for you, the Wichita West Volunteer Fire Department right here in Texas. So thank you, Chief Salka. So, hey, you know, our topic today for our listeners, this is something, John, you know how we come up, we just fly by the seat of our pants with our topics, you know, usually just go, hey, what do you want to talk about, John? John says, hey, let's talk about the K-Tool or whatever. One of the topics that came up recently, and John, you remember this one was, and our little talks of tactics and strategy with different folks, was the question about getting the second floor. And I guess two different avenues. One, getting the hose line to the second floor, the floor above. And then second, getting to the second floor for the search. Because I think there's some different considerations for each, both advancing an attack line and then or trying to, you know, get up there without a line and search. So John, I guess the first thing maybe, I guess would be, let's talk considerations. We've talked about this before, but let's talk about advance. Let's talk, stay right now with, forget search. Let's talk advancing and that attack line to the second floor. Let's just call it a residence, right? Residence or maybe apartment building or whatever, but let's talk about the door of choice again. I know we've talked about this before, but I don't think we can really get any further without starting at the beginning going, okay, you pull up, you got a two-story frame, maybe a two-story apartment building, you know, talk to us about the door of choice. We've done this before about which door and why, and what are the considerations when it comes to the door of choice.
Right. So you're talking about a second floor fire. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Second floor fire.
Right. Actually,
to talk about it both ways, John, maybe a fire in the first floor, and then we can talk about now we got a fire in the second floor, no fire in the first floor.
Right, right. And the reason we can do that and talk about both the first floor fire and a second floor fire is basically it doesn't change anything as far as what door you select. Now, obviously, any home could have been renovated. Any home could have, for example, my house where I live. I have a big, beautiful home with a front door with an elegant stairway going up the front to the front porch and the front door. And it's very nice. We never, ever, ever use the front door. We drive past the front door with the car, around the side of the house, and we have a back entrance that we use all the time. That's just very convenient for us, okay? I try to explain to people that should have, I think, zero, very little, if any, bearing on where you stretch your hose line. Where you stretch your hose line into basically a house fire, right? Apartments are a little bit different, but generally it's the same answer. You basically stretch into an ordinarily built house conventionally built house, traditionally built house, you generally stretch to the front door, and there's a couple of reasons. So let's go with that first floor fire. You have a fire on the first floor of a house in the rear right corner. What would that be? The A, B, you know, the C, D corner, right?
Right, right.
The 3-4 corner. You got a fire out one window back there, a bedroom on the first floor, or even the kitchen. The reason I always recommend, suggest using the front door is a couple of reasons. Number one, when you get in the front door, you generally have access to the entire first floor. You generally have access to the entire building, right? For a couple of reasons. And once you get in the front door, one of the first things you're going to pass or see or be able to locate is the stairway to the second floor. Now, the second floor is another whole area that's being exposed by this same fire. The fire's in the kitchen. It's exposing the dining room. It's exposing the living room. The smoke is coming out. Generally, houses have unenclosed stairways, open and unenclosed stairways.
Well, so real quick, and that's a great point. I was hoping you'd bring that up. I think people forget, firefighters, that, you know, we got a floor above us, but there's no door up there, you know, right. keeping the, you know, the
it's heat. Not like an apartment house where, yeah, even though they have an open stairway, the apartments all have closed doors on the hallway. In a house, unless you keep your doors closed all day long and all your bedrooms and stuff like that, for the most part, all the smoke and heat goes up the interior stairs and floods and fills all the, I mean, a lot of people are killed on a floor above a fire in a private house. Get a kitchen fire or a living room fire going at 2 a.m. People on the second floor are actually in more danger than people maybe 2 rooms away on the same floor. So back to our first floor fire, you stretch into the front door. One of the first things you do is you're going to pass by the stairway. It's either going to be right in front of you, right across the room, right in the hallway that you entered. You're going to make your way to the fire. And although some people have been either criticizing or minimizing the effects of some of these old concepts that we've had, you know, getting the line between the burned and the unburned, I still think that's one of the most valid concepts in the fire service that there ever was. And when you go in the front door, then you go and find the fire. And of course, you know where it is because you saw when you came in that it was in the rear corner, right? Rear right corner. You start heading towards that area. Conditions are going to change and get worse as you get closer. And suddenly you're going to be at the door, the entrance door, to either to that room, or you're going to be however far the fire has advanced from that room. Now you're between the fire and the burned and the unburned. And now if there's crews coming in behind you to go up to the second floor to make a search while you're fighting the fire on the first floor, now that area is secure and they're protected because you have put the line between the fire and the stairway, between the fire and the front door, between the fire and the rest of the rooms on the first floor. You've really locked that fire into its original location by stretching in the front door. So that's a scenario for a fire on the first floor. Now you do the fire on the second floor. Obviously, we have to get to the second floor to fight that fire. And I'll go back to the same piece of information. It's a geography question. Where's the stairway to the second floor? And I'll tell you right now, 90%, maybe 99%, I don't know what the percentage is. Somebody will hear this and go figure it out and do a survey. It's a very large percentage of homes. When you go in the front door of a private dwelling, of a house, you're either at the stairway, you can see the stairway across the room, it's to your left, it's to your right, or it's somewhere in the entrance hall if you're going into a larger home. Obviously, you got to get to the second floor to fight a second floor fire. Why would you go in a side door, a back door, a garage door, and then have to make your way to a stairway and look right for it? When you go in the front door, it pretty much drops you at or near or within visual line of sight.
And we talk about this all the time, and we've mentioned these guys before. Stockton, California, we've got some great friends out there across the country. Our good friends in Spartanburg, South Carolina, with Marion Blackwell, the chief, and just guys and gals all over the country. But man, you watch those videos, John, they hit the ground. You see them helmet cams and they are through the front door. I mean, it's just, you know, you can watch those videos and you can, for our viewers, and it's like you're on the line with them. You're through the front door. They're either to the right, to the left, straight ahead, attacking fire, you know, in there. Second floor, boom, there they are. They're the fire's rolling above their head. They're hitting it. Everything you just said, and I guess, John, my point is you can see the quickness of getting the line through that front door, which we always say, never say never, never say always, but pretty much all the time. It, like you said, it gives you such a great vantage point to control and run that whole floor or get to that second floor. So let me ask you, before we get to the second floor, And I think you're probably going to hit this next. I may be jumping the gun here. You know, the question always comes up, and I know how you and I feel about this. Charged, before we even get in that building to get to the second floor, charged or first floor, charged or uncharged line, residential fire. Charged, right, or uncharged.
we do talk about that all the time. And especially, well, I shouldn't say especially the FDNY, just that that's where I have a lot of experience. The FDNY in multiple dwellings, apartment houses, tenements, et cetera, they stretch in dry all the time because they're going into a to an apartment building. They're stretching up to the third or the fourth floor and then down a hallway. They're stretching five or six lengths of hose. And they're protected by the door to the fire apartment, even though it's up to the third floor, even though it's almost like the front door to a house.
Right. But
when you go into a regular house, when you go into a private dwelling or a house fire, there's no guarantee that the fire's in a room that the door is closed or that you're protected. So, and there's a couple of other reasons as well. So I always recommend that and I can't believe that you could buy a book or a magazine or a training manual or watch a video that would show you anything else other than charging a line at the front door before you go into the house. Number one, it guarantees that you got water, that you don't have a pump problem, that you don't have a burst length, that you don't have some other situation that you don't want to be in there when you discover it. That's number one. Number two, you can charge the whole thing, flake it out. And now when you go through the front door, a lot of people's front doors either are self-closing or they get kick closed. And if you run a flat dry hose line under a front door and then that door slams closed or even just slowly closes over the hose and then you charge it, that door is going to be locked in position. You won't be able to use it. You won't be able to get out. Nobody else will be able to come in, really. And it's going to greatly diminish. Oh, gosh, I don't know what the percentage is. 75, 85% of your water is not going to be able to get
through. Well, forget that heavy door. How many people have those heavy screen doors, those storm doors on the front, which granted isn't going to be it's not going to trap you. But if you're upstairs and you close, it's still pinching. It's still closing on your line. And when your line charges, like you said, there goes the majority of your water.
Right. And no door can close over a charged line, even an inch and three quarter. Inch and three quarter line a door can't close on top of it. Additionally, couplings and things like that. And that, again, that flat hose, you run a flat hose into the front door of a home through the living room to get to that kitchen fire and then call for water. Well, again, the piano in the corner, the couch at the doorway, that line may run under one of these pieces of furniture now, either grab a coupling or again, when it gets charged, it may hinder the water flow. So there's a lot of reasons not to go in there.
Yeah. Just look at everybody. Line. Yeah. When you're on an EMS run, John, just look at everybody's living room. Look at what they have for furniture. And some people got bicycles and they've got, I mean, there's so much stuff that you can get your line, that dry line, tangled up in, through, around, or whatever. Right. Why not? Like we've always said, our goal should be to reduce the odds of things going wrong at a fire, not increase them.
Additionally, dry lines can kink. When you charge a line out on the front lawn or out on the sidewalk and then pull it in, it's generally not going to kink. It's already hard. It's stiff. It's got pressure in it. When you pull that dry line in there, even if you're being careful, even if you're trying to flake it out and kick it out, somehow you can end up with a piece of hose at the end of a hallway or underneath the couch or between two pieces of furniture. And now when you charge it, you can have an acute angle kink, and you could again restrict water dramatically. Whereas if you go in there with that charge line, it's going to be a nice, straight, hard piece of hose, charged sufficiently, and that's one less thing to worry about. We're trying to eliminate things that can happen that can slow down or negate the fire attack. And going in the front door and going in with a charge line are the two first things that an engine can do to have a good, successful operation.
So we're heading to the second. You know, we talked about attacking that fire on the first floor, but you know, we're talking here this show getting the second floor. So we get to the top of the stairs. One of the things, John, I think there's a lot of, we're talking considerations here first, is when you get to the top of the stairs, knowing where your fire is at. If you know, you may just have chugging smoke and not, I've been there, you've been there, where like, you know, is it to the right or is it to the left? Especially the stairwells in the middle, which most of them are, you know, not all, but most of them. Am I going right? Am I going left? You know, what indicators am I looking for? You know, if I have a hook, and I know I've got an attic above me, am I throwing a hook up into the ceiling to pull it to make sure, you know, see what I've got above me, just like we would on a one-story frame, you know, a ranch, making sure it's not running the attic above us, or if it is, we want to know that. So getting up now, the other thing is, I mean, I know it's hard, you know, just knowing your staircases. You know, we talk about apartment buildings and high rises, how we want to run the hose like up around the outside, you know, if we can, you know, like around, it helps reduce kinking. People aren't tripping over it, but I don't think you have that opportunity with a smaller residential staircase to, I mean, you can push it off to the side, but most of our staircases are not that big. Talk about firefighter positioning, John. You know, just like we would in a basement fire, we did our show on basement fires about who goes down and who stays up, and then when do you come down? So I'm on your nozzle, you're my officer. Let's talk about in the heel, you know, because most of these departments are running three guys. Maybe two on a line, you know, could be the officer and a nozzleman or whatever, or maybe three. You might be lucky to have a heel man. So talk to me about your Captain Salka. I'm your firefighter. You know, let's talk line, I guess, positioning on the line, if you will. Is that a factor at all? Or, I mean,
absolutely. Especially like we're talking about, you know, making either the floor above or the second floor. So now we're going up a stairway. So it's a little bit more effort involved. We're going to have to pull a charge line up the stair, which is not, obviously, it's not a great physical feat, but certainly it's a little bit different than just dragging a hose along the floor. So you really need, I think the best would be to have three people, and you can include the officer in this. Obviously, you get to the top right of the stairway, you see down to the right-hand side, you see the stair, you know, the room that's on fire, a bedroom on the second floor. Now, that's where the officer might say, okay, Tommy, take the nozzle, head down towards the room, and the officer might stay back at the top of the stairs and pull some hose up as the firefighter's advancing towards the room that's on fire. And don't forget, you're probably going to need somebody down at the front door of the house where you started. And again, that could be a third firefighter. That could even be the pump operator. Pump operator charges your line when you're at the front door. Another thing charging a line at the front door does for you, it sort of releases the pump operator from the pump panel. It releases him from the rig. He can now run over to the front door. You got a charge line, you're moving in. He could go to the front door or a third firefighter. Obviously, that would be the preferred. But if not, the pump operator, your engineer, he can help feed the line into the front door from the front steps as the officer at the top of the steps is pulling a line up, as the firefighter with the nozzle is going down towards the room on fire.
No hazard to himself.
The officer is smart. I just want to add one thing. If the officer is smart, or whoever it is at the top of the stairs, you pull an extra 5 or 10 feet of hose up to the top of the stairs, and then you're good. Then you follow the line to the nozzle, and now we got the team back together. We got the officer and the firefighter on the nozzle at the room, the door to the room that's on fire. And now we pulled up that extra hose up into the second floor, and that's the hose you're going to use to advance into the room.
And I think that's something, John, I'm glad you brought that up. I think that's something when you and I talk about the basics a lot and how we don't train old school to plug our other show. But we always taught that. We always did that when it comes to hose line management. You know, it's no different than if you're going to pull a 2.5 off the back of the rig, you always want to make sure you pull enough off, so when you break it down and you charge it, that you don't go, oh crap, I need 50 more feet to get to our need. All right, shut it down. Let me, you know what I'm saying? Same thing, you get to the second floor. If you know Rick's going to the right with the nozzle, you know, we've always taught that. Pull enough line, pull extra line and throw it the opposite way. Throw it, you know, so it's like, you know, it's so much easier to pull extra line down a hallway or even up the stairs when it's already on the first kind of, you know, pushed in a little bit, then you're trying to drag it from the front lawn all the way up the stairs. You know, what's it take? A few extra seconds to pull that line up and throw it, you know, off to the side. Charge, you can do it, no problem. Charge. In fact, you know, throw it there. And that one now, as your nozzleman's making their way down towards that bedroom, they're pulling extra line from the second floor, not necessarily up the stairs. I just think that's a great point you made, because I don't think we talk enough about those little tricks of the trade, I guess you will, of making hose line advancement easier.
And that's especially important for small crews, either volunteer department, you know, rural areas that doesn't have a lot of people maybe on the first apparatus, or even small career departments that just have, you know, two or three or maybe even four people on the rig, counting the officer, counting the driver. You know, like where my son works, there's a driver, there's an officer, and a lot of times there's one firefighter in the crew compartment. Sometimes there's two, but a lot of times there's one.
Well, and we're not throwing the driver in harm's way. We're not sending the guy with no gear and just his bunker pants or her bunker pants.
No.
You know, we see the video, we see the stuff that just as important it is for the driver engineer to flake line, you know, while the guys are packing up, you see the driver stretching the hose, flaking it out, getting it ready, because you're just standing there waiting for someone to say charge it to begin with. Get helping the TAC crew as they're maybe masking up, you know, the officer's doing his 360. You've seen this how many times? Officer's doing his 360. Nazma's got the line. He's on his knees. She's on her knees. They're putting their face piece on, all the stuff, their hood, their helmet. And you see the driver stretching all the extra line, getting it flaked out so when he charges it, it doesn't kink. And then when they start pushing in, you see him on the front lawn, you know, just put, you know, pushing at the front door without being in harm's way, folks. We're not talking about, it's such, God, again, it's another little thing we don't talk enough about, that those, right, those makers and breakers of incidents, John. You know, it's like the difference between having enough line to get into the bedroom to kill the fire before it gets into the attic, before it gets out into the other room, could be that driver, just like you said, that driver engineer pushing some extra hose so you can actually get down the hallway quicker. You know, one, two, three, the links in the chain of a successful fire attack, that's one of the links is, you know, because we've said before, so what'd you do, John, to fire? Oh, I just drove. I just pumped. And that always drives me nutty. No, you didn't just pump. First of all, what you're doing is supplying life to the crew that's inside, because if they lose water, they're going to be up shit's creek. You know what I'm saying? Just, you know, there's nothing on the fire route that is a mundane, meaningless, you know what I'm saying? Every single one of those things we do connects together. And I'm just so glad you brought that part up, because that's one of those links in that successful fire attack, getting to the second floor. Watch the videos, folks. You'll see them. Good driver operators are always busy. They're always busy. They're throwing lines. They're doing this. They're not just standing there, you know. I mean, some, you know, when all that's done, they may be going, hey, when they're calling for, waiting for you to call for water. But God, that's such a great point, John. Overlooked so by so many people, the key, you know, work that a driver can do for you.
Yep. Absolutely.
So, I mean, so stretching. So we talked about firefighter positioning. Let's just do this, because somebody brought this up the other day, you know, about the 2.5. Now, you know, we're both big fans of the 2.5 attack line, especially with a smooth bore on it. So you can really throw some water and advance it. But we've said this before, you know, as much as you and I are both huge advocates of 2.5s, you're not going to drag a 2.5 into a single family dwelling. Look, anybody could do anything if they really wanted to, but I'm just saying it's not efficient to try and attempt to drag a 2.5 into a single family dwelling, even some of these apartment buildings, and get up to a second floor and make all the bends in the hallways and all that stuff. So you mentioned already, our line of choice should probably always be that 1¾-inch line with whatever nozzle you train to. But, and John, real quick, before we get into hit the second floor for search considerations, you and I have both seen it. I've been on fire grounds where it's happened, where the moth to the candle, if you will, of the nozzle crew, they got a fire in the first floor. People are yelling about the second floor. They hit the fire in the first floor, knock it down, and they're on their way to the second floor. And what happens to the fire in the first floor? It starts to kick up again. And I know guys that it actually burned through their line. They ended up with a mom and two kids fatal at a fire in an apartment building, where sometimes I think, you know, loose heads, if you will, well, we're not calm enough to really sit there and go, wait a minute, we don't drag a line. We don't pass fire. You know, I think you've talked about before with a nozzle crew, you know, search crews. Sir, we'll talk about it. Search crews. Sometimes, yes, you have to pass fire. Some of the most heroic things I've heard about with firefighters and we've been a part of ourselves has been guys that have had to pass fire to get to a kid in a bedroom or get somebody. But your thoughts real quick, we're not passing fire with hose lines. What's the point of bringing a hose line if you're going to pass the fire, right?
Right. Obviously, you know, the hose lines to put the fire out. And that does happen occasionally. That's if you have not, I don't want to call it a surplus. If you have any more people on scene or arriving on scene, they should just quickly put a second line in position after the first floor is knocked down and they're going up to the second floor. If there's not an immediate second line there to cover that, well, then they should not eventually, but as quickly as possible, stretch a second line to completely extinguish and cover the rest of the first floor while the line's, you know, advancing up to the second floor. Perfect. If they're too engaged on the first floor, then maybe the second line is going to get the second floor. So that's not in stone, you know, that's variable.
Right. And I think sometimes, you know, some of the departments that are showing up and they're waiting for that second engine and waiting, I think in there, okay, well, we got to get to the second floor now. And I think sometimes, man, if you don't make sure that whatever you had on the first floor is dead, is killed off, is dead, you know.
Another good thing for the MPO, for the chauffeur to do is the first line's operating, getting ready to move up to the second floor, that and the second engine's, you know, in route or arriving. that MPO, after he gives water and gets that first line going, he can actually pull that second line off his rig, bring it to the front door, flake it out, have it laying there, waiting for the second engine. When the second engine gets there, they go right to the line. They don't have to pick a line, select the line, flake it, charge it, pull it. They just have to jump on it, put their face pieces on, and go to work. So, again, another little job that the MPO can do after getting water in the first line.
Exactly. Again, for those that say, I just pumped or I just drove, you know, maybe someone hasn't sat down and explained to you all the things you can do to impact that fire ground as the driver operator. So, all right, let's switch gears. We're talking about getting the second floor. We talked about advancing the hose line, our attack line to the second floor, whether it's a single family dwelling or apartment building or whatever. But we've been, you know, we're talking a lot of house fires, majority of fires in the fire service. So let's talk the search, John. You know, one of the things you and I have talked about umpteen times is if you think you're good, and I know there are some departments out there that their policies are, they don't search without the protection of hand line. And I get that. I get that. And it is true. They're out there, but you and I've said this a bunch of times. If you think you're going to search a lot, I'll say, dragging a hose line around with you and on one tank of air, by the time you make it, you're on air, you got to get to the line to the second floor. And now you're up there and now you got two or three bedrooms, you know, hallway or whatever common area. And you're going to try and drag a hose line around with you everywhere, especially if there's no fire up there. You're not going to get much searching done when it comes to that. Okay. But let's talk considerations. You got a fire to first floor. All right. And we got to get to the second floor. We got to get to the second floor for a search. If you're the crew, you're back on rescue 3, all right, in the Bronx. Considerations going to the floor above the fire. What are you thinking?
Right. You know, whether you're rescue 3 in the Bronx or Latitude in Louisville
or the new truck with the Wichita West Volunteer Fire Department.
That's right. That's right. It doesn't really matter where you are. Again, we're restricting ourselves pretty much to house fire. So you get this, you know, 1.5-story, 2.5-story house fire, fire in the kitchen, fire in the living room, 2:00 in the morning, occupied building. There's really no way to sugarcoat this. The best way, the most effective way to search is to get a crew in there immediately while the first line is going in and put the fire out. I'm not suggesting people running into this building before any line is in there. But we do that too sometimes if the truck gets there ahead of the engine. But I'm not even suggesting that. If you just want to limit yourself and say, listen, we have to have at least a hose line in the building before a search crew enters, I can even go with that. But you can't say you have to have a hose line for every search crew because it's absolutely not the best way to do it. I can't call it wrong because there's a lot of places that do it and they manage. They get it done. Right. They don't have a lot of structural fires in houses. They don't have a lot of trap victims in, let's say, stable residential neighborhoods. But the point is, you still could have it. And we've had some pretty serious fires right here in South Plymouth Grove. Recently, where search teams went in without a hose line. The hose line was attacking the fire, and the search team went in without a hose line. We even just recently had a rescue attempted. There was fire out the first floor windows, extending it to the second floor, extending it to the attic. We had to knock the fire on the first floor down from the outside to position a ladder so a crew could go up to the second floor and go in like an outside vent.
They do a vent under search, yeah.
They found a victim, and they dragged him to the window, and we got him out the window. And it couldn't have been done without that hose line, but the hose line didn't go up the ladder and it didn't go in with the search team. It just protected them from the outside. So going in the front door, going up to the second floor, if there's a line in the first floor, making a right, making a left, going to the living room, going to the kitchen, it's on fire. Yes, it's going to be hot. It's going to be smoky. It's going to be dangerous on the second floor. But once that line is in position, that team is I want to say protected. I don't know how well protected they are. But the fire is probably not going to roar past that hose line and get to the second floor. They're going to be in some hot, smoky conditions up there, but they should be able to get up there very rapidly without a hose line and begin a search operation, however many bedrooms it is, wherever the person is possibly reported trapped, or just start systematically hitting the bedrooms and making a search and finding them and bringing them out. The best, fastest way is without a hose line. We know that.
And the key here is, and you just mentioned it, is coordinated, you know, the coordinated attack. We've talked about this since day one in probie school and the academy, the engine crew and the search crew. I'm not going to call them the truck crew because they're, you know, you don't have to have
right, a truck. It could be any apparatus. Right.
You know, yeah. Whoever it is, the coordination between the two is huge. The communication, the officer or the leader of the search crew, communicating with the officer on the engine crew, or just knowing where you're at, who's going where, that I got a crew going above you, whatever. I mean,
and I'll take it a step further. Yeah, I mean, a good solidly staffed engine company, even in a volunteer outfit, 10 o'clock at night or a Saturday afternoon when volunteer staffing is probably at its best. If you fill an engine up, you got an engineer and an officer in the front seat and four firefighters in a crew cab. You go to a house fire, there's no reason that you can't have a pull a pre-connect to the front door, officer, nozzle firefighter, make entry with the line, and the other two firefighters gear up with tools and head to the second floor for a reported victim trapped up there. There's no reason a fully staffed engine company, whether it's volunteer or career, there's no reason they can't get both of those jobs done simultaneously. Like you said, the coordinated fire attack. Again, people are using terms like that nowadays, like they invented something new. We've been doing it. We've been doing it for 80 years.
How important is it though, John? The communication between the two, because we've seen this before, where the engine crew, sometimes they got to get their asses kicked on that first floor because they know there's a crew on the floor above them searching. And once they commit to that second floor, that line on that first floor does not leave. You don't abandon those. And how it's happened, right? Where all of a sudden they're back. Well, we got to back out. We're low, you better get someone to relieve them with fresh air or whatever, but you don't abandon the guys on the floor above you if you're the crew on the line downstairs. Because
right. And of course, most engines don't. Most engines push in and put the fire out and do a great job. And I got to tell you, having been there myself, like you were, when you're on a search team on the second floor of a house fire and you know the line's operating below you, it gives you more confidence about what you're doing. And you go a little bit faster and a little bit farther than you might if you were up there and you weren't sure if the line was in position yet. So knowing that you're going in behind a charged line that you're already working on the fire, that should help you search even better.
Well, and what do you, and I, you know, I've talked about this. It's kind of funny when I ask you, what do you, because you and I talk about this stuff so much. So you're searching, you're on the second floor, you're the officer. You and I are up there searching, the two of us, which is probably the most common, two, maybe three person search. Again, we talked to the most common engine crew in the United States out of almost 40,000 fire departments, manpower-wise, is the three-person crew. Yeah, we'd love to have four and five, but when you look at the numbers, the statistics, that's the most common. Same thing when it comes to search. Most common search crew, to be honest, is two people and are doing a search, sometimes three. You're my captain. We're up there searching. What are you listening for on your radio? We're crawling, we're searching. Maybe you're at the door. You push me. I'm in a bedroom searching. You're at, because we talk about leapfrogging and leaving somebody at the doorway so we don't lose control of the door or our way out of that room, which we've seen how quick that can turn to poop when you don't pay attention to that. You're listening. What are you listening for as the officer on the second floor? You're my officer. We're searching. What are you listening for on the radio between command and that first floor attack crew?
It's not even just between command. You're listening to everything, number one. So you got to listen to your guy. Your guy, you'll hear him or maybe not hear him, and you can tell if he's doing all right, if he's found somebody, he's having difficulty, if he's lost, if whatever. That's number one. Number two, you're listening to the engine officer. You're listening to them saying, engine two to chauffeur, give me more water. Give me more pressure. So now you hear there's an issue going on with the hose line. Or you can hear, you can hear the officer calling the command officer saying, engine one to command, main body of fire is knocked down. We're moving in and going to wash down. That's great news when you're making a search above the fire. Or we need another line in here. We're not able to hit the fire from our vantage point. Now suddenly you hear they're being slowed down and maybe the fire is gaining headway below you. Now you might have to pull your guy out and say, hold on a second. Let's get back to the top of the stairs and make sure we're okay up here. So you got to listen to everything. And another advantage, and we talk about this in our RIT class and our Mayday class and all our other classes, another advantage of everybody staying on that primary tactical channel together. You're not only talking to you and your team, you and your crew, you and your engine, you and your truck, but everybody's listening to everybody else, even stuff that you have nothing to do with other than the fact that you're relying on the first engine to put the fire out on the first floor while you're searching on the second floor. You never talk to them, but you listen to everything they say. And you'll hear if they're having trouble, if they're having success, if they're backing out, if they need to back out, if they're calling for more help. So just another little side point of everybody being on the same primary tactical channel with the benefit of it.
Well, and the only person that needs to talk to the dispatch center is the incident commander. There, we just talked about this at Wichita West Center, we, you know, we always had these great, like your guys, where we're sitting around after a call or we're sitting around after drill night and we start talking tactics and strategy and stuff and, you know, all that. And it came up because there's a department near us that wears out. They get dispatched, John, on a dispatch channel, and they never change. And they talk like that. You think it's Howard Stern and a bunch of, you know, guests. They don't shut up. If you had another call, you couldn't get on the radio with as much as these guys talk. And they never switch. And they've got tactics. They got the channels and the radios. And they've been sent letters by the head of the County Chiefs Association. They've been asked by nicely. They won't switch. And we talked about this, you know, when somebody says, well, you know, we can't wear our radios underneath our coats because how do I change channels? I'm like, why are you changing channels? You know, you've got your fireground channel. The only person that needs to talk to dispatch is the incident commander, you know, and if anything, if he or she's not there yet, then your pump operator could jump on the mobile on the rig. But there's really no other. You know, the most important people on the fire are the people crawling around inside the damn burning building. And that should be your priority. And then if you have to carry a second radio to talk to your dispatch center or whatever, you know, you could keep the mic. I used to keep a mic, John, on my radio strap. You know, when we were in Illinois, I had my fireground radio always up next to my throat, up next to my chin so I can listen with both ears and talk without a problem. And I had a second radio clip down here, and that's the one I'd call dispatch, give an update. Where's this engine coming from? Whatever. And put it down there. And you know, to be honest, if they were calling me, if they had to call me twice, I don't care, because the most important people to me are the people inside the burning building.
Right. We did the same thing in the Bronx, and I always had the handy talkie one radio, which just talked on around, you know, radio to radio on the fire ground and my aide. And I know that, you know, a volunteer fire chief or a small city fire chief might not have an aide, but you certainly can recruit one. You certainly can grab somebody and say, hey, Billy, Tommy, come here. Hey, Lieutenant, come here. And somebody could talk to the dispatcher for you. I rarely talk to the dispatcher in the Bronx. Now here in South Bloomin' Grove, I have just what you had. I have the talk around radio for everybody who's in the building. And then I have a separate radio that I wear that goes right to the dispatcher. So I just listen up on both of them. If I need some more help, I got to report something, you know, I'll talk on that radio to them. And then I'm always listening up on the talk around radio for the, you know, for the fire ground conversation.
Well, and again, the communication is key, and there's something I want to bring up about that in a second here. But I think sometimes, John, the difference between the first, let's talk first floor fire tech. You know, we talked already about the hose line, you know, getting to the second floor with that attack line or with the second line. We talked about that already on this show, the considerations and thoughts, you know, and tasks needed to accomplish getting to the second floor with the attack line. Now we've been talking getting to the second floor for the search. Sometimes I think guys are overwhelmed, John, because on the first floor, you're the crew fighting fire and everything else. And we say, okay, Captain Salka, get to the second floor, give me a search. And you get up there, and now you're hearing stuff on the first floor, but I think it's two different environments, John. You don't have steam and water and stuff flying around you as guys are pulling, you know, do it. Now you're up there, which can be extremely hot and a lot of smoke while you're waiting for the truck crew to open the roof or someone to take a window or whatever. You know, I think sometimes that can be intimidating, John, for a newer firefighter. You get to the second floor and it hasn't been opened up yet because we're at the, you know, we're at the beginning of this fire attack, right? We got the line of first floor, we're getting to the second floor. And I've been up there where it's like somebody's actually holding your shoulders down till they open the roof or someone pops a window. It could be a little bit intimidating for the new firefighter because you're up there, you know, your lifeline, the nozzle you used to hold on to. Now you're crawling around your hands and knees. You got a thermal imager. Your officer's going, come on. You're going, Lasky, this way. Come on, down here. We're going down here. All right, get in there. First bedroom. Get in there. Give me a search. And you're at the door. This is where the training in reduce and zero visibility. This is where a good officer, the calmness, I think, John, with a good captain or a good officer on the line of, it's all right, we're up here. Yeah, it's pretty freaking hot. Yeah, there's a fire below us. Yeah, there's a ton of smoke up here. Yeah, there's actually pressure. Yeah, there's zero visibility. You know what? We're okay. We didn't crawl into a cube. There's windows somewhere. You know, there were stairs leading up to this. Let's do our job. But I think that can be intimidating for people. You know, the two the two different environments, right? One with where you're flowing water and one where there's no water. Just those two can be intimidating to a young firefighter.
And that's why training is so important. This should not be the first time somebody's encountering that. Nope. You know, the first time somebody encounters high heat and heavy smoke without a line, it shouldn't be at a fire. It should be at a training event.
Exactly.
Now, there's a great benefit to a live fire training. You can burn pallets or hay or whatever you want, and you go to the floor above, and it's hot and it's smoky, and that's a great environment to train people how to operate in that environment without the security of a hose line. And if you don't train them to do that, write it down. They're not going to do it. They're not going to do it. Firefighters are not going to do it. They'll hesitate at the top of the stairs, or they'll go really, really slow, and you won't end up getting a great or a complete search anyway. So if you train people up, if you train them up into the environment that they're going to have to operate in, then they're going to be able to do it.
Well, this is the importance we've talked about searching your room orientation drills, you know, staying oriented in the room, knowing where you're at, because you don't have a hose line to fall back on, knowing your walls, knowing your doorways, right-hand search versus left-hand search, or left-hand search versus right-hand search, you know, choosing which direction you go, where the bedrooms are at, or whatever. No, imagining the layout. You know, I've told people, imagine the layout. You look at the building, you take a look before you go in and go, okay, second floor, I know pretty much there's going to be a bathroom up there. There's at least three bedrooms. And you kind of, you almost want to be surprised. It's, wow, okay, there's an extra room. I thought there was only three. You're already thinking layout of the building. You should go up there and go, wow, I didn't know there were three bedrooms. It's pretty simple to pull up and look at a building and kind of put together what you're crawling into. Lastly, and this is where I want to go back to, like I said, I didn't want to lose that thought on the difference between the first floor and second floor operation with, you know, conditions, smoke and stuff like that. You know, we're talking about getting a second floor. John, progress reports are huge. You know, you're outside, you're the chief. Your guys just made two dramatic rescues with your volunteer department. The one with you had mutual aid companies going through the rear, dragging a lady out while the crews were hitting a crap load of fire in the front. And then you had this last fire where guys had to go do a vendor search with fire pushing out the windows of the floor. That's like Metal Day. Guys are crawling up ladders with fire that you had to knock down that's coming up like pretty much through the ladder so they could get a guy. I mean, you know, these are career makers for some guys. Some guys never make a grab their entire career. Your guys did it. The progress reports of you. So you're outside, you're standing on the front lawn, or you could be down the block in your car. But, you know, I just progress reports from the crew on the first floor and from their search crew, especially if we made it to the second floor. I want to know what's going on. I want to hear, not like every 2 minutes, but I want to hear, you know, command from the interior, command from Division One, command from first floor. But chief, we got a lot of fire, but we're making progress. Or I want to hear command from, you know, Division One. Look, we've got several rooms of fire, two rooms of fire. We're losing the battle right now. You know what I'm saying? I want to know that things are going from hell in a hand, going to hell in a handcart before I'm actually in the cart, you know, right? I mean, so as a chief, all the years in the Bronx and in your valley department, how important are the progress reports to you?
And they're very important. And progress reports are really the duty of company officers. There's two ways to look at it. Company officers really just have to report what they're doing as they're doing it. So you go to the second floor with a team of two, you search one bedroom, the guy comes out, okay, let's get to the next bedroom. So report that. Right? Search team one to command. Go ahead. The first rear bedroom is complete and negative. We're moving to the second bedroom. Now the chief outside knows that we're making progress up there. We're entering the second bedroom now. When you get done with the second bedroom, again, you can report that. Both rear bedroom searches are primary, complete, negative. We're moving to the front room now. Now the chief outside is measuring the progress. Now he, you know, when he gets a second search team in there, number one, he can say, don't do the rear rooms. They're already done. Start with one of the front rooms, right? Same thing with the engine. Main body of fire is knocked down. We're moving, you know, we're knocking down a lot of fire. Or we're at a standstill right now. We got a large room. You know, we need to get another line in here or whatever the problem or whatever the success is. Just report what you're doing, what you're getting done, and the chief outside is going to be recording that. The other perspective is the chief outside not hearing those reports has got to elicit them. He's got to call for them, right? Command to engine one. How are we doing on that line? What's going on? How are we, you know, we got water flowing. We're knocking down the kitchen fire now. We're moving in 10-4. So sometimes you got to call them up to get the report. Sometimes they'll give you the report. I remember as the officer of 48 engine, I was just dying for my guys to knock that fire down. I was dying to say 4-8 to command fire, main body of fire knocked down. I couldn't wait to say that because I knew the chief outside was waiting for it. And I knew that was going to affect the rest of the operation. So two perspectives there are important. Both the people giving the reports, and if the chief's not receiving them, He's got to call people up and say, hey, give me a report. What's going on?
And at the same time, to the Chiefs out there, and we love you. We're, you know, we've done it for a long time. Give your guys a chance to crawl 3 feet further than they were the last time you asked for a progress report. Sometimes, you know, these guys are banging on them, John. Like, you know, keep in mind, your guys and gals are in there busting their ass, stretching line, pulling ceiling, searching on their hands and knees, doing everything they can to get in there as quick as they can, get to the seat of fire, search all the rooms. You know, keep that in mind too when you're asked for progress reports. But like you said, that just that fact I said they're busy means just what you said. The incident commander has to prompt them sometimes. Sometimes you got to go, like you said, you know, second floor search for command. How you guys doing? You know, chief, we got one more room to go. And like, okay, good. They got one more, you know, they should be calling back an all clear or negative search, you know, whatever in a second, you know, it's coming up soon. Instead of, we only got two bed, you know, whatever. Now they tell you we're halfway through. You're thinking they're not going to make it on a full tank. You know, it'd be like 7:30 over here. Hey, get ready, mask up. You guys are going in. You're going to finish the second floor search for those guys. You know, so the progress reports talked before are huge. Like you said, sometimes you know, that's your job. You're the one running the orchestra. You're the one on the front lawn with the sticks in your hand. You know, you're the one that needs to conducting everything, and you got to prod people and you got to ask people. And if anything, it helps you with your overall plan as the incident commander, figure out what you're going to do next, knowing what they're doing. So huge, huge, huge. So any other thoughts on getting to the, I mean, if we're sitting in a class, I mean, any other thoughts, John? Nicole? I mean, we talked a lot of great, this is another great show. Getting the this second is
a
great floor. Show.
And unfortunately there's about a million more thoughts about radio usage and everything else. So I think we covered for today. I think these are some important concepts for people to think about, you know, both the search and the hose line stretching and the access point and the size of the hose line. Gosh, we covered a lot of stuff, and it's important. And, you know, house fires are a very common occurrence everywhere in America. You can be in a small rural department, a small career department, or you can be in a big city department, and everybody's got private dwellings. So you should master that.
Well, if anything, you know, maybe folks listen to what John and I just talked about and jot down some notes and just start at the beginning and jot down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then go back and insert a 2A, 3A of things that, you know, you think, you know, you should insert there. And, you know, you come up with two really good lists for your firefighters of, okay, here's our considerations, our priorities when it comes to getting the second floor with a hose line. Here's what we want to do with a search. And I think you come out with a pretty good checklist. And, you know, there's going to be things that obviously we didn't talk about, like John said, that you're going to put in there, but, just a great topic, John. It was just a great, I'm glad we were able to cover this one.
Yeah, it was a good one. Good one.
For the command post. So our fire engineering folks, our fire engineering family, that we're here with the command post. John, if they want to get a hold of you, best email.
ChiefJohnSalka@gmail.com.
And I'm ChiefLasky@gmail.com. And one more time to the members of the South Blooming Grove Fire District, and up in Orange County, New York, thank you for sending us. You know, I John, you and I talked about it. It's an older rig, but it's like a muscle car. You know, it's like you guys dropped a new engine in it, a new ladder. It's spotless. It's just, you know, you look at these guys with these old Camaros, these old Mustangs, and they run like a champ. That's that ladder truck, man. I mean, it's got some years on it, but it's like they just drove it off the muscle car room showroom floor. So
go ahead.
I was just saying, my boss, my chief Ryan Fetzer is excited as well as the other guys. And, you know, it's, I can't wait for, you know, like I said, Chris Bashford went to FDIC. He wasn't at the meeting on that. He had a family commitment, but I know he's fired up about it too. So everybody's already ideas about where they're going to put the tools and what's going to happen, all that stuff. But anyway, go ahead, buddy.
I can't wait for you guys come up and pick it up. It'll be fun. I just wanted to mention our World Trade Center 20th anniversary coins that we're doing up here in Washville. We lost five guys in a little town I live in. We built a beautiful memorial, and actually we're getting prepared to build another small memorial for the guys that are dying of World Trade Center related illnesses. And if you go to www.wbgny911.org, if you go to that website, you can order the 20th anniversary coin, 9/11 coin, and all the money, all the funds from the sale of those coins is going to go exclusively for putting up another stone at the same monument where we honored the five that died on 9/11. And we already have three names that are going to be on there of local firefighters and cops that have died of World Trade Center illnesses. That's www.wbgny911.org. $20 coin for the 20th anniversary.
And if not, you know, hit John at chiefjohnsalka@gmail.com and he'll send that information to you, or just replay right. this section. Right. And if you're a challenge coin collector like I am, and I already have that new coin proudly displayed next to the 10-year anniversary coin, which John still has. So if you're a coin collector, you know, you're selling the 10-year ones for how much, John?
The 10-year ones are $10. If you want the set, get me on my website, on my email, chiefjohnsalka@gmail.com, and I'll take care of it. You can get the set, the 10-year coin and the 20-year coin for $30.
Yeah, you can have both of them. I've got both of them on display, and I know I buy the 10-year anniversary coins from you. And when I meet a soldier, an airman, a marine, a sailor, a coastie, or whoever, a vet or whatever, or a firefighter, I love presenting that to them.
And every penny of that money, all that money is going to build that new monument.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Well, hey, God, another great show. And, you know, we try to keep these time-wise so you can listen to them on the way to work or when you're working out or at your volunteer firehouse. And we ran this one went, this was awesome, John. Great topic, buddy, as always. Hey, folks, in closing, John and I always ask, golly, especially right now, John, in our world, right? If folks, right now, especially our ending phrase, you know, send off to you is always to please keep the men and women serving our armed forces in your thoughts and prayers, as well as our brothers and sisters in our law enforcement community. But with this being the 20th year, since that horrible day when our friends were murdered, there's a lot of never forget and all this stuff. And John, sadly, you know, you go to the shows and you see the new rigs and you have to really search the floor to find one that has a 9/11 memorial sticker out, which Louisville will always have them on theirs. So I guess the point here, folks, it's on my challenge coin because that's, 343 and that challenge coin in the back says something very important, especially with us being where we're at right now, the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 is, never forgetting means just that, never forgetting. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Spread the word. We want you to be safe. Take care. We'll see you next time, and God bless.